Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Gamers Inn. I'm your host tonight, Ryan Murphy. Jocelyn's on vacation, and you may notice that I am the sole person here tonight. Well, that's fine, because in a moment, we're going to be joined by some very fantastic guests, because it's been a very busy summer. Not a lot of games coming out, but for some reason, you folks seem to keep telling me that you're playing games. So I want to know what you're playing. We're going to start pulling people in randomly from the Discord and just talking to you. So I do want to give everybody a heads up. You're probably going to notice some audio quality differences between our guests. Some of them are podcasts. Some of them are just fans that want to be on the Gamers Inn. So with that warning out of the bag, let's bring in our first guest and get this rolling. First off, I'm going to bring in Void Chronos because he has posted a screenshot basically saying that it is 3 a.m. there because he's in Russia. And we know that because we played Mario Kart with him not too long ago. I don't know if you can hear me, Void Chronos, but when you got a sec, just start talking. How's it going? Well,
I'm doing fine. Thanks. Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show. I just wanted to jump right in because I know you posted that screenshot that it's like 3 a.m. there. And you're a trooper. You're such a trooper for being on the show that early? Late?
That's late, but I'm kind of sick and under the weather, so I slept till 4 p.m., so it's fine.
Oh, there you go. That's not so bad. I'm glad you're able to join us because I know you've got some words for me, and then you've got some words for the folks out there as well about Destiny. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in the Discord, you were going back, which is a rule. Never go back and listen to old episodes because our opinions change so much. But you were talking about how in 2014, I tore Destiny, as you put it, a new one. I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about that and then jump into what I'm assuming you played the Destiny 2 beta.
Yep, indeed I have played the Destiny 2 beta. Well, when I was listening to the 2014 Game of the Year episode, I thought I remembered that despite your overall negative opinions, you gave Destiny a pretty good pass, but when I listened to it to fact check myself, I found out that you was quite disappointed.
Yeah, and you know what? I had basically said to you, like, hey, that was 2014, Ryan. Fast forward like 8 months later to you know, September 2015, Ryan, when he's playing Taken King, and he's back in. He's good to go. The original Destiny had its perks, but I mean, if we remember the way I sort of like to play games, it's single player first, raiding, and PvP second. So I'm glad that you went back and listened to it. But yeah, for those folks who are hoping Ryan was a hardcore Destiny fan, he was in about 2015, and hopefully later on this year when Destiny 2 launches. So you've had some time in the beta. I'm not sure if that's what you wanted to chat about tonight, but I am curious to hear how your time's been in the beta. I've gotten a little bit of time in, but I'm sure you've played a lot more than I have.
I've played almost the entire yesterday's evening. Mm-hmm. Since the beta launched. It was 8 p.m. and I played with a group of people that I usually played all my Destiny years. Mm-hmm. For, I think that was 4 hours, so till midnight, non-stop, just. I got so sunk into the Destiny once more. Mm-hmm. I have not been playing Destiny for the original one.
Yeah,
for like 3 months, because it's kind of stale already, and I wanted something new.
Yeah,
the Destiny 2 just sunk me in, and even though there's only 2 multiplayer modes with a single map in each and 1 cooperative strike, which is a dungeon in every single other MMO.
and the
intro story mission.
Yeah, so they kick you right in. Like, you don't get to customize your class, you just pick. I think you can customize which, like, in-game, you can customize what your power is, but it gives you, like, a souped-up Titan, Hunter, or Warlock, depending on which class you choose at the start screen. And then it boots you right in to the first story campaign with a little bit of a cutscene. And I think you play a little bit farther than what was displayed at E3, but I could be wrong. I feel like they didn't get that far in the gameplay demo at E3, like where it ends, with basically the setup of I won't spoil it because it's going to be an open beta, I think, tomorrow, and everybody can play this this mode, and you can even play the initial story mode without PlayStation Plus or Xbox Live. It's available to everybody. So it is new to us, the folks who haven't been to E3, to play this. And I got to say, the intro story mission is exactly what I was looking for in not only a Destiny game, but a Bungie game. Very story-focused, a lot of great dialogue. They wrote Bill Nighy out of the story. They, like, there's a couple throwaway lines like, the speaker, where's the speaker? I don't know, he's missing. So that's fun. But I played the strike, which was kind of felt like just a strike they could have done in Destiny 1. It didn't really feel, there were some cool moments in it, but it didn't feel like they were doing anything like sequel-ish. I don't know if you agree with that statement, but do you feel like this is, it's obviously more Destiny, but do you feel like Destiny 2 feels like a true sequel? Did they need to slap a number on this bad boy?
I'm not sure about the number, but it feels like it's Destiny, but more and better. Like, mm-hmm. in every single aspect of the game, the polish feels, and it's much, much better. I have high hopes for the balance of the PvP, because they have implemented several interesting decisions. Like, for example, there is only one power weapon and two primaries. So... But in terms of the strike, I think they have chosen this one to put into the beta because it probably spoils the least amount of story.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Pretty self-contained. Mm-hmm. Although, if you start it several times, there are different dialogues when you progress, and some of them spoils a little bit, unfortunately.
Oh, really? I didn't know. Now, I know that there's a basic spoiler based on once you finish the story mission and then boot into the options to do the strikes or the PvP, there's an obvious story spoiler in terms of your character continuing to exist. So, I mean, it's not necessarily a spoiler because, they're not just going to kill you off, but it's one of those things where they had no choice but to, you know, give you more in the beta. And but it introduces the bad guy. It introduces the bad guy's motive. It introduces, you know, the peril that all of the Guardians are in. But it doesn't give you story spoilers as to why you get out of that mess. Because clearly there's some progression between the intro story mission and the strikes that you were able to do in the beta. But it feels solid. I mean, it feels like Destiny 1 with better content around it. It still feels very much like Destiny. The UI is all the same. There's barely any tweaks to kind of like the base, you know, management of inventory. But there are some clear upgrades to the game with the way that the destination maps work, where you don't have to go into orbit. You just launch right in, and you get a bit of that with the strikes and stuff. There's no like orbit menu, which is cool. But I don't know. I haven't played a lot of it. I'm looking forward to the game when it launches, but I haven't touched the PvP. So you've played a little bit of the PvP. Why don't you give me a bit of a rundown on that?
Well, first of all, they have decided to cut the different players, team sizes from the game. So there are all PvP modes are 4v4 exclusively. So there are, at least so far, as right. far as we know, there are no 6v6 or 3v3 like it was in the first Destiny, and it feels great, actually.
Good.
The maps are quite smaller. I think that's a great addition. It reduces the downtime of getting to the conflict point from the respawns, and draw two modes they have shown there. The classic hold the point and kill all the dudes while holding the points.
That classic kill all the dudes.
Yeah. And the second mode, which is somewhat similar to the Counter-Strike, I think, which is round-based, best of 11, so until 6 wins, where each team gets a turn trying to attack or defend several points. In the map they have shown there were 2 points on the map. So if you're attacking, you have an option of placing the charge on the, as they're called in that map, rugs.
Right.
And market locations. And the opposing team have to defend those locations. When you place that charge, you have, I think, 45 seconds until it explodes. And if all defenders are dead, you win the round. Or if all attackers are dead and charge is not set, the defenders win. And if all attackers are dead, but the charge still goes off, so attackers still win.
Oh, so it's kind of like Counter-Strike, that made mode in Counter-Strike. Okay, wow, interesting. They didn't have that in the base game? That seems new to me.
Yeah, it's completely new.
Okay.
And with the new mechanic of the power weapons, which give you, in the first, I think that was 20 seconds of the match, the charge of the new power weapon slot.
Mm. Okay.
You can make a big play by waiting for that box and trying to push for the win, or try to counter that box and camp someone there. And because the map is pretty small, getting around is really fast because, well, Guardians have a lot of movement.
Yeah, there's a lot of mobility in Destiny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The game mode feels really dynamic and really cool.
Cool.
Well, I think we'll see it in the some kind of amateur tournaments, like there were a league set up by the community at the end of Destiny, which was really cool to watch. And I think we'll see that mode show up in that kind of tournament setting. Cool.
Well, I think it's awesome that you're playing Destiny, and I did, I know I kind of forced the topic on you. So before I swap you out and bring someone else in, is there anything that you did want to talk about besides Destiny? Is there anything else that's kind of, you know, caught your eye? Are you excited about Splatoon 2? I know that you played Mario Kart with us. Again, there I go, injecting content. So what do you want to talk about? Like, I'll give you some time to talk about what you want to talk about, and then we'll bring the new person.
I didn't want to talk about Splatoon. Mm-hmm. I wanted to hear your thoughts on the test fire, if you have played it.
I did not get a chance to play it. Honestly, I was super bummed that it was one chunk of time and I just couldn't make it work. I had the in-laws here, and I'm excited to play. And the other thing too is I figured in a week I'm going to be playing it. I pre-ordered it. It's going to hopefully be here before next week's show, and I'll be able to talk about it. I'm definitely excited about Splatoon 2, and I was sold based on the fact that there's another single player mode and the fact that they have co-op horde mode. For some reason, I can't get enough of Horde mode in no matter what game, and I'm looking forward to seeing Nintendo's take on that. I'm a little concerned that they are only available during specific times, but it looks to be more available than the normal Splatfest. But still, you know, only available during a specific time. Hopefully, we get some that overlap with game night, and we can test that out, because I know there's going to be at least 4 people who have Splatoon that are patrons. So hopefully, but I'll definitely be playing Splatoon 2. But did you play the Splat test? Did you get a chance to?
I played about an hour of it.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I was quite confused with the motion control thing.
Right.
I never had a Wii U, so I never played the first Splatoon. And although I tried motion control in Zelda and I liked it, in Splatoon, it was kind of weird for me.
Yeah.
Because even though you have the right stick to control your camera, in the motion control mode, you only move your stick only moves your camera left and right, but mm-hmm. you have to move up and down with the motion control, and that kind of set me off.
Yeah.
But in general, I like the game. I'll probably be getting it first week.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely be playing, and we'll definitely connect. And anybody else who's interested, definitely get into the Discord, exchange friend codes or however they're doing it these days. I saw that Nintendo Switch Online app launched and has people in an uproar about how voice chat works. And let's be honest, we're just going to use Discord. Let's not worry about whatever Nintendo's throwing our way. Definitely let Nintendo know that they're doing something weird, because hopefully they're in a mode where they're willing to, you know, make some changes. But I do want to thank you, Void Chronos, for being on the show. We'll definitely bring you back on in the future when we have another one of these call-in episodes. But I'm looking forward to getting our Destiny and Splatoon on in the near future. So thanks again. And
thank you.
Is there anywhere on the internet where people can find you if they wanted to connect for Destiny or Splatoon?
Well, you can try to find me on the PlayStation Network at void_Chronos, but I think it might be a little bit too weird of a time zone difference.
That's true. But hey, it's 3 a.m. and you're here. It's not too crazy. Every once in a blue moon.
You have a point.
Yeah, it's true. All right, thanks again, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, so we're going to bring in our next guest here, the Geek Review, who, hello, Geek Review. You have a name. You must have a name, because, and I should remember it because we've been talking. It's Michael, right?
Yeah.
Oh, nailed it. Michael's, it was a good guess. It was either that or, actually, there's another Michael who's going to jump on later on, but I'm glad you're here, and we will talk about the Geek Review, but I did want to mention and thank you. Michael's one of the patrons who subscribes at the level to be a patron ad, and we'll definitely talk a bit about the Geek Review in place of the scripted ad that we've been reading, but I want to know what you're playing, I want to know what's on your mind, and let's chat about it.
Well, as you would know, I know you talked a little bit with Void about E3. I've actually went to E3 this year.
You went?
That's crazy. Yes, I went with my cousin. Nice. And I gotta say, it got really bad reviews from a consumer standpoint. Hmm. From a, you know, if you're going there to research stuff for the news, like GameSpot or GameStop or any other the magazines that are out there or game stores, then it's great, because then you can go there, you can basically get your hands on it, and then you can sell it to your customers. And E3 was not geared towards the consumer, right? This time around, they did have like one or two merchandising booths, but that was it. And the first day when I went and picked up my ticket, I was talking to the people at the cash register. And they said, yeah, we're probably going to sell out all of our E3 merchandise within the first 2 days, because we didn't think so many people were coming. So,
but they sold tickets.
I don't understand it either. And honestly, for the price I paid coming from the East Coast, going all the way to the West Coast, it wasn't like enough of feedback for me, you know?
Hmm.
Obviously, I got to stay at my cousin's house, so that's not wasn't a big expense. But we were still like an hour to 2 hours outside Los Angeles, and driving from outside Los Angeles into LA was like a disaster zone.
Hmm.
And it was just like the hottest weather possible. But I did get to see a lot of cool things there. Like I saw Destiny 2. I saw GeForce. They had some PCs set up to play Destiny 2. Mm. I saw a bunch of cool VR stuff that they were trying to sell to the industry heads. My cousin, he got to try the Oculus Rift. I actually like the Oculus Rift myself. I'm planning to build a computer just for that. I saw the new Call of Duty. I saw Assassin's Creed Origins. I saw a bunch of stuff, and I wanted to try it, but the lines were so out the door, it was just like physically impossible. And actually, I was on the line for to go at the Ubisoft booth to go and play Assassin's Creed Origins because I'm a big Assassin's Creed fan. And what happened was they said, we can't accept any more people on this line because we're exceeding the amount that we could actually keep on this line. So you can come back in about 30 minutes, and if you're lucky, you can get a new another position online.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah.
So did you get to play? So yeah, so for everybody wondering, E3, which took place last month, and Michael and I and Jonathan were talking a little bit about, you know, you were going and you were going to be there physically. This is the first year it's open to the public, in a capacity where they, I think from my understanding, is they literally just, they didn't make any changes to the show besides maybe a merch booth, and just said, hey, let's sell a limited amount of tickets to everybody. As a test, and they didn't really do anything else. That's what it kind of got from the press, and that the press were still able to go and play the games with their appointments, but they didn't do anything to accommodate all these extra people coming in. Exactly. It sounds like that's the case.
Yeah, it was. And I went to the Los Angeles Convention Center before for a different convention for Anime Expo about a couple years back. And it was more organized, set up for, you know, consumers and everything. And compared to that time, it was just like, this is kind of like a disaster zone walking into. Like, it was cool. I liked it. You know, I loved seeing all this stuff. I liked seeing all the, you know, the big names there. But other than that, I even went in because I was thinking about doing they have this whole meetup system that you could do. You can pay and you can meet up like heads of industry, get like exclusive interviews and everything.
Oh,
and I'm looking through the website, and tickets 3 days before cost like $900.
Oof.
And I purchased mine at $300 like 6 months before.
Mm-hmm.
So, and compared to me going to at the other big convention I go to is New York City Comic Con. I had spent like $100 on for ticket to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So, E3, they have to like on it. I loved it. I loved going there, and I'm not saying, hey, look, it's bad, don't go there. But for the price I paid for the ticket, I might as well just stayed home and watched it on Twitch because then you just got the highlights anyway.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like, obviously, you didn't regret it. You had a good time. Did you get to play any? Did you get to play? What did you get to play, I guess, is the question. I'm curious, like, what did you play? What was the biggest takeaway from your hands-on time with something?
I didn't get to play anything. Oh. Because quite literally, when you first walked into the convention center, they had to open up at 10 o'clock in the morning, which is not a bad time, but me and my cousin, since we're driving from out of town, it's an hour, 2 hour drive, and by the time we got there, the lines were 2-3 hours. It was like physically impossible to get your hands on anything unless you're willing to spend your whole day sitting on that line, or a good portion of the day sitting on that line to just go see, go play a game. And it was just like physically impossible. Even my cousin, he was like, I have nothing I want to see right now. I can just wait for it to come out or wait for an actual demo in hand.
Yeah.
So
even waiting a month, like with Destiny 2, if you were interested, you could play it like literally tomorrow, sight unseen, not even having to pre-order it to try it out. And you're playing the same mission plus that was available on the show floor at E3. And I mean, that was one of the things that I had heard from a lot of other podcasts that were there as press or whatever, that the way they handled the public being there, they talked to a lot of folks who were saying, yeah, I waited 3 hours to play Super Mario Odyssey. And they're like, they were waiting for them to get really upset. And it's like, no, it was amazing. We got to play this game, even though it is most of the experiences that are on the show floor for the public were going to be out in the next 6 months. But There are these opportunities I find locally, no matter where you are, where you have a better chance to actually try something, because E3 is just this big thing. It's huge. And I find, like you said, like New York Comic Con, here locally, there's a lot of stuff that pops up in Toronto that I can go up to and check out and play these games.
You got PAX East, PAX North, South, West. You know, those are another big gaming convention that you can easily go and try demos on with, you know, not a 2 hour or 3 hour wait. And it, you know, I loved the experience we got in there, but I'll probably wait another couple, like a couple years to go back there until they really get it back into gear of, you know, okay, well, we have this here for, you know, the Microsoft and PlayStation and Ubisoft and, you know, news companies and everything. We got to take it down to here for consumers.
I think it's important that they shift their idea that if they are willing to take money from the public to come and see these shows, is that they need to continue to serve the press in the way that they need with appointments and behind the scenes demos and stuff like that. But also, if they're going to serve, if they're going to take the public's money, they need to build a show that supports that model, in which, you know, more like PAX, where there's not just one line to check out Assassin's Creed Origins. Like, the game, that franchise went away for a year. A majority of the public are going to want to try that out because it's the return to that franchise after being annual for almost a decade. So it shouldn't have surprised Ubisoft that when they put one line in, it's going to fill up and cause, you know, fire code issues. And this, I mean, maybe there just wasn't enough discussion between the organizers of E3 and a lot of the booths. Maybe there wasn't enough time to, you know, shift. But I find that what's probably going to happen next year with E3 is that they'll double the amount of public tickets they'll sell, and they will work with the major publishers to say, hey, focus on demos, focus on crowds, and make sure that we can pull, you know, push people through these things. It's not about press anymore. You can do the press stuff behind closed doors and then focus on the public, because that's the only way that E3 is going to continue to survive, right? Yeah,
exactly. And they'll probably still survive because it's still a major hub for the press, you know?
Right.
It's for the, pretty much for the press, but as a consumer standpoint, it would not survive if they don't change their platform. And even there was like Ubisoft, like you said, there was the line and they had to cut it off. I went to the Microsoft booth because I wanted to try the new Xbox One X. They had a bunch of games set up, right? But then they had like the whole press interview and everything that was going on right in the middle of the booth as well. So that was taking up a lot more floor space that they could easily take more Xbox One X, set them up, and have you play the games. And these, I was talking to a lot of different people there, and one person I was talking to, they said, well, if they put a time limit on the games, like, okay, 5 minutes, you're done, move on, I don't care where you're at, get going, you know? And that was another thing too. Sony, they had you register online, and if you were lucky, you can get a spot in line, but then you were still waiting there for an hour or two. Microsoft, it was a 20 or 30 minute wait, but they said, oh yeah, just come back in 20 or 30 minutes, and if there's a spot open, you can take it.
So, you know, being with the Geek Review, having your own podcast, having a presence on the web, did you look into opportunities to kind of not take it, I don't want to say take advantage of, but use the fact that you are technically press, and maybe you're not going to get appointments with Microsoft or Sony. I certainly wouldn't have been able to even on, well, maybe, you never know. You got to try. But was there an opportunity to try maybe some of the smaller publishers ahead of time and get in their ears and say, like, you know, technically this isn't me getting to try the new Mario Odyssey or the new Crackdown 3, but it's an opportunity to get my feet wet and talk to some publishers. Did you look into that at all? Did you think about that?
Well, I thought about it, but my situation is that I don't feel like I have the adequate numbers, the adequate subscribers or the listeners to really back up and say, hey, look, I got over 100 listeners or 50 subscribers or whatever, right? And I would love to talk to you about the game or go and try the game and give a review on it or anything else for that matter, because podcasts and even like YouTubers, they live and die by their subscribers, how many likes they get, how many people share their stuff and everything. So it's just a hard market. And I've been around. I actually made up business cards, handed them out at PAX East. I literally walked away with 10 cards out of 100 that I printed. I went to E3 and I only handed out about 5 because nobody really wanted to know about me. They said, oh, okay, that's nice, and they walked away. So it's not even like a given chance to even go and explain what I really am doing and try to hook people in.
You know, it's funny. Like, I mean, E3 is kind of like a big pond to start with, you know, and really, I think you have to carve your niche out online and kind of figure out who your audience is. And you say, like, you know, if you have a low subscriber number or a low listenership, like most, you know, there are, and, you know, email me after the show. I can certainly point you in a couple of directions to start, because there are places to start where these publishers aren't necessarily interested in you printing off your stat sheet for the month. They're more interested in whether or not you're going to cover something fairly and properly, and they give people opportunities, like smaller publishers. And, you know, you're developing content, and sometimes it can be helpful for you and for the publisher or, you know, the PR person to kind of work together to make sure that you're provided with, you know, a product to review fairly and passionately. That's what they're looking for. They're not even looking for a positive review. Like, sometimes I've gotten, you know, from the same PR company, codes for games that I've loved and talked about how much I love them, and codes for games that I did not love, but still, you know, talked about it. It's something that everybody starts somewhere, and there are a lot of publishers and a lot of PR firms out there that understand that, and they give chances to those folks, because you got to think, like, a new voice talking for, you know, about their stuff is helpful, you know, because they're technically maybe hitting a new audience. Even if it's one person, that one person could go out and decide and make a decision. You know, we're not necessarily talking about, you know, slinging products or anything. We're talking about, you know, a relationship between a PR company and, you know, a podcast or a firm. And it works the same way across the board. Like, here on the Gamers Inn, when we receive, you know, products for review, we always talk about them fairly and equally. And, you know, there's no, I know for me, I don't give any extra credit, even if we received a code or it's a demo, or, you know, I've even gotten stuff from Nintendo. It's just about asking, you know, and explaining yourself and telling them what you're looking to do. But we can
Done it a couple times on Twitter. And I was actually talking to one guy about getting those joints. They're like little joystick covers to help you improve your gaming for Xbox or PlayStation, right? And I was talking to him, and he's like, okay, how much are you willing to buy? I'm like, well, I'm just really would want to try your product and give a review on about it. And he was totally uninterested about it. And that's only just one example of it, you know? And yeah, obviously, if anybody listens to my podcast that listens to Gamers Inn, I'm a very opinionated person, and I usually go hard on products, but it's not because I hate the product. It's I want them to improve their product so they have a excellent product. That's why even when I go on early access games on Steam, I give like a partial review of it. I'm like, well, there's a lot of improvements that needs to be changed on this game. So for now, I'm giving it this rating. So, and, you know, maybe 10 weeks down the line, I go back to the game, try it again. If the improvements haven't been improved, well, that's, you know, that's their prerogative.
That's really the key right there, is that if you're reviewing a product, or even if you're trying something, if you're not a part of a podcast, you're just an average consumer and you're trying something on early access and you're writing a review that's critical of the current product, committing to come back is a good thing. And a lot of publishers appreciate that. A lot of developers appreciate it, especially indie developers who are relying on that metric in Steam, like, you know, very positive or positive or even negative. Like, if they have a negative review, and it pushes them under, and they are now in the negative column just by a collection of reviews, that can mean less sales. Not necessarily, you know, saying that they want people to go out, and maybe some developers do, but most developers don't want them people to go out and just flood it with fake reviews. They want people to be honest. But
Yes. You always want to be honest with the while you're reviewing it. From your end, my end, like anybody that does a podcast or and they're doing it as a review service, you want to be as honest as possible. And that's the thing, you know, some people don't want to hear. They're like, well, I did it like this because this is how I want it. Okay, well, then, you know, good luck with whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that I'm like, well, it looks entirely bad. Then like a week down the line, they're going under because it didn't pass snuff, you know. It's mm-hmm. But with me, I try to review everything and anything, and the reason is because I want to be able to cover, you know, oh, I read this awesome book, but my podcast only covers video games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to bring to light these obscure books or obscure games or obscure items to say, hey, look, there's stuff out here that you guys don't know about, and this product's really good. Or, hey, look, I got this product in, it's really obscure and it's not worth it. If you ever run into it, don't even bother purchasing it, you know. Because you always hit upon like those ads on Facebook or Twitter and everything. They're like, oh, we're selling this new item, right? It's an obscure item you never even heard of before. So I'm trying to get like to the front of the line to review it and be like, hey, look, don't even, it's not even worth your money to purchase this item. So, yeah.
So you, since we're talking about your podcast, why don't we roll right into the patron ad? So like we said, Michael is at the level of our Patreon, patreon.com/thegamersin, where he has a patron ad. So let's talk a bit about the Geek Review. Tell people where they can find it. Tell people a little bit more about what you do on the show, and then we'll swap someone else in. But yeah, let's do a patron ad right now. So the Geek Review, tell people about it.
All right, the Geek Review is dedicated for an honest consumer review. We review everything and anything. You can catch us on our main podcast website, which we put up all our podcasts on, new and old ones, is thegeekreview.podbean.com. You can also check us out on iTunes, so anybody that has an iOS device, laptop, or a tablet or cell phone, you can go on to the app application and go and search for the Geek Review. We have the red standard logo. If nobody's familiar with the logo, it does say the Geek Review on it. It has a couple things we review: technology, comic books, and novels, games. We have a Twitter account. The handle for the Twitter account is @TheGeekReview. PB. PB stands for Podbean. If you do not put the PB at the end of it, it actually goes to somebody else that's not active on Twitter anymore.
Oh.
I tried to message him. He didn't get back to me, so I'm figuring he's not on air anymore. So we're on Facebook. We have a group and a page. Good. So you're more than welcome to join the group and page. I post all of my podcasts on both Facebook and Twitter. So if you don't have an iOS device and you still want to listen to my podcast, you can go on to Twitter or Facebook and they'll be on there. We also post up on YouTube. I actually connected my podcast account to YouTube, so it'll post up the podcast up on there. We have a different channel on YouTube, but I'm not going to even talk about that either because that's not entirely important right at this second. We have a Discord channel. I'm trying to build up a Discord community.
Good.
A group of people to get together to chat and everything, you know, like you guys at the Gamers Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a Patreon, patreon.com/thegeekreview. And it's, you know, any amount will actually go right back into the podcast. You know, for movies or for video games or technology and stuff. You know, it's expensive to do this. So, and I think the smallest amount I have is a dollar. You know, a dollar would be great. So,
well, I'm really thankful for you coming on the show and jumping in on this call and episode. It's always a gamble, but I like to line up as many people as possible. And I thought of you and a couple other folks who had been itching to jump on the show and let us know what they've been playing. So definitely check out the Geek Review at thegeekreview.podbean.com. Check it out and listen to some honest reviews from Michael. Thank you so much for being on, man. Any last words? Is there anywhere on Twitter that they can follow you specifically? Or,
well, again, I have my one Twitter account that's The Geek Review, and that you can pretty much follow me on there. Okay. I try to post up things often, and I actually right now I'm on out of a job. I lost my job recently.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I've been a little bit more active on Twitter and Facebook now, so
good.
Thanks for having me on here. You know, I've been really wanting to do a podcast with you guys.
Thank you.
And so I'm very thankful that you guys actually wanted me on this episode with you.
Yeah, we're just in that summer blur. Jocelyn's on vacay. I'm heading into vacation right now, but I wanted to get a show out. So I thought we'd pull a couple people in, but I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. And we'll bring in our next guest. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
All right, so before we bring in our next guest, Void Kronos in the chat room wanted to follow up on the Splatoon voice chat scenario. So I alluded to this, but Nintendo's doing a bit of a Nintendo thing where in order to do voice chat with Splatoon 2, you have to use the app, fine and dandy. But that means you have audio coming out of the game and audio coming out of your phone. And we won't even get to the other technical issues, or maybe we will, might as well mention them all. You know, full disclosure here, I personally probably won't be using the Nintendo voice chat because A, you have to have it running on your phone and you can't turn off the phone or close or hit the home button to close the app. It has to be open. So if you close it or you shut your phone screen off, it is pausing that voice chat. So complete drain of battery. And also the fact that you need a special gadget to merge the audio between the Switch and the phone so you can hear the voice chat and the audio for the game. Completely ridiculous. I feel like they will do this for Splatoon 2 and then never do this again. Like, voice chat will either live or die by the fact that Nintendo is willing to fix this for future games. And honestly, between you guys and me, I'm not really that interested in Splatoon 2 voice chat. And if I am going to use voice chat, I think, you know, we did Mario Kart with Discord, worked out quite well, we were happy with it, got us through the night, and we're still standing. So that's kind of where I'm at on the whole Splatoon 2 Nintendo thing. You're going to see a lot of articles, people giving Nintendo a hard time. Rightfully so. It's a really weird setup. Not really thought out that great. Anything that requires an extra piece of hardware, and this is only for it working out of docked mode. If it's in docked mode, unless you have an aux cable that runs the room from the TV stand to the couch, no one's going to do that. So I think we're just going to probably have to wait and see. But really, in 2017, there's only one game coming out that Nintendo really needed voice chat for, and it's Splatoon 2. I don't think you're going to see much else requiring it, or at least having something that's useful. But it is a multiplayer shooter. It really helps to have voice chat. But anyways, we're going to wrap up the show with our final guest, or unless someone else wants to jump in. Again, I should have mentioned, if you wanted to jump into the show, just get on Discord, jump into one of the voice chats, and I'll do something like this. But it's Mike. Brought Mike in. Podcast dude.
Hello.
Hello, magic. The magic of the internet.
Hey, I was a second behind on the Twitch channel, and it just completely threw me off. Hello.
Well, that's the magic of the internet, and also I felt like I was wrapping up there. But no, I told you that we would chat for a little bit. We'll close out the show here with you and talk a little bit. It's always one of those things with call-in episode. I know Jim had mentioned he might pop in and chat a bit. Jim, if you really do want to come in, let me know. I'll pull you in as well, and we'll have a group chat. But I love doing these call-in episodes. I love talking to the people who we only hear from once a month because you happen to be around for game night. But this is a special event where we're just chatting it up with fans in the show. So Mike, how's it going? What are you playing? I want you to talk for a bit. I'm sick of I'm going on vacation. Tell me what you're playing.
All right. Well, two nights ago. Now, you know, I was a little conflicted of whether I should talk about this or not, because it's kind of been talked to death, I feel.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you just, you know, mention it, and then I'll decide. I'll be the czar of this. Czar? Where did that come from? Let me know what you want to talk about, and I'll figure. Right. I'll drop the hammer if need be.
All right. Well, two nights ago, I picked up. Why am I blinking all of a sudden? Oh no! Player Unknown's Battlegrounds.
Oh well, we can talk about that. That's acceptable.
Right, I wasn't sure, because what finally got me into the game is just that week after week, this game has been blowing up to headlines. They recently signed a deal with Facebook for exclusive streaming events, so to draw the community closer to the developers. They now hold the record for the fourth most concurrent players on Steam, beating out GTA by 22,000 players.
Wow.
And it's just been week after week of this game, and I'm like, I have to pick it up, or maybe I'm missing out on the next generation's, you know, biggest game or something. So I picked it up, skeptical, mind you.
All right.
I was, you know, it's a survival game. I usually like a bit more story. You know, I'm kind of like you, where I like a story to carry me along in a game, to keep my attention. And I love it for some reason.
Yeah. You have the same reaction I did. Like, literally, like, I hate survival games, and I hate multiplayer games, and I hate competitive games. Hate's a strong word. I really strongly dislike. But, yeah, you get in there, and it's like, it's competitive, but if you're playing with friends, it feels like more as though it's not really competitive. It's more about cooperative, about working together, and it's less about killing people, and it's more about just surviving. The fact that sometimes people kill you, it's usually because you've made a mistake, or you've just bum luck because you have to travel to the inner circle. Yeah. And
just one random guy around the corner.
Yeah, and maybe that person is really good at shooting in PC games, fine. But I find most of the time, if you have a solid strategy, it doesn't matter how good someone is at shooting. You just have to hunker down and hope for the best. And sometimes you have some really quick rounds, and they're not as fun as the rounds that take forever, and you end up winning. I think I've won a couple times. It's one of those things that was a really big surprise, because usually early access, another one of those little tidbits, don't really work out that well for me or most people that I know. And the fact that this is clinging to life still is awesome.
It's a gem.
Yeah. And the fact that they're still working on it, and they're talking as if it's going to leave early access soon, like in the next couple months. They delayed it I think they delayed it to the end of the year, right? Did you read that news?
I believe so.
Yeah. Now that's exciting. I'm glad you're enjoying it. So how much have you been playing of it? Are you just kind of jumping into the mode with friends, or are you playing on your own?
I've only been able to play on my own so far, but it's been incredible. And I don't know why. To be honest, what has killed me more than anything else is that I learned the hard way about how the map shrinks over time. And the first time I was playing, I was just like running through a field, right? And this giant glittery wall passes by me. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I wonder what that was. And then I start dying. And I just begin to freak out. I was like, what is happening? I go into prone because I think someone's shooting at me.
Right.
Just kind of like I learned the hard way. And I think, so far, I think the wall has killed me more than anything else.
It
happens. Because I find that I'm very timid in the way I play, where I tend to hang out in one spot for a long time because I'm a little nervous about moving out in the open. That's usually where I die most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why the wall's there. It's to keep people moving, it's to keep the action going. If the map was open the whole time, games could go on forever because people are just trying to find each other. And I do enjoy it, but it's also against the way I play the game. So having to adapt to that has been a joyful experience.
Nice. And you know, you mentioned that your strategy is to be timid. The game I won with a squad, I didn't fire a bullet. I was literally just, you know, listening to my teammates. they were firing a lot of bullets. So some would argue that they were like carrying me, but I would argue that I was a good spotter. And whenever I freaked out because I thought someone walked by my window, that then led to a kill. Therefore, I was like, I don't know, like the hunter dog or something. The guy who screams when the bad guy's near. And then you know that you have to get ready to shoot someone. So I find that, you know, hunkering down, and there's a scavenging component. We've mentioned this before. Most people are probably like, yeah, we get it. We know how about the core concepts work. But the scrounging, I really love about it. And it feels very much like what I would like in a zombie game. You know, they don't really do a lot of the whole scrounging in zombie games. The one game that did it was State of Decay, and that was my favorite thing about it, was just scavenging for food, for ammo. And the fact that you're doing it in this game alongside the competitive and cooperative mechanics is just really a really good mix. And it's just the reason it works for people like us who aren't big in multiplayer games is that it's got a nice balance and a great gameplay loop, where if you die or if you get a bum rap or you don't get enough scavenged items, guess what? You die and you just go into the next match. You don't even have to wait for it to finish. It's not like a Halo match where you have to play, oh great, I'm paired with a bunch of really good people and I gotta wait 20 minutes for this match to end. Just steamroll us. Let's get this over with. It's not like that. So I don't think it's really a bad idea to talk about this game, because I think it's going to be around for a while, and I think they're adding new maps, new modes, new weapons.
The zombie mode.
Yeah, I want to try the zombie mode. I guess they're player-controlled zombies from what I heard last, but is there anything else that's sort of keeping you busy in the gaming world? We got a little bit more time.
I gotcha. Well, I kind of hopped back into Fallout. That's been fun, because I never actually completed that game. So I'm going back in and exploring and finding new quest lines. That's been exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I haven't really played that much since I picked up PlayerUnknown's Battleground. And just to hop back just a second, talking about the scavenging.
Right.
What I really enjoy is having to make do with what I find. And it's a puzzle to me, is how can I be most effective with the weapons I find? And it's never the same so far for me. Like, I've had games where I've had a shotgun, assault rifle, pistol attachments, and I feel like I'm doing really well, and then I die shortly after. But I had a game where I had nothing but a crossbow and a pistol, no ammo, and I got to 17th. And it's fun for me to solve that puzzle of how can I be most effective with the equipment that I have now. And I've been really enjoying that.
Cool. I'm glad. And I think a lot of people, again, like if you're finding, and I know maybe if some of my friends are listening, it's like, Ryan, you say you love it, but you never play with us. It's like, it's been so crazy busy and I want to play Battlegrounds. And that's the other great thing about Battlegrounds. You feel like it's a big time investment, but really to jump in for one, two matches, it's not that much time. It's just a quick in, out, you're done, go home, eat lunch. It's a really quick game. And I know like a lot of people looking at it, it's $40. Like, yeah, it's expensive early access, but I feel like there's a good amount of content they're going to be adding. And it is an investment, and it's an investment as well as sort of a good faith gesture towards the developer, because there's no need. Well, the reason they want to keep developing content is because it's selling like hotcakes. But yeah. I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. So before I let you go, why don't you tell folks where they can find you on the internet and about College Gamers Podcast?
Well, I do the College Gamers Podcast, or a weekly general gaming podcast. We talk about whatever gaming news, whatever games are playing. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, bluecowradio.com. And you can find me on Twitter at bluecows with a Z, BLUECOWZ. And that's about it.
And you interviewed Kyle Ferguson just like... Probably not recently, but lately. I think it wasn't too long ago, right?
No, it was only like two or three episodes ago, and that was a joy. That man is, he's one of my favorite podcasters, because he does Into the Nexus with Garrett Weinzierl, for anyone who doesn't know. And he does such an excellent job of taking complex information of like high-skilled Heroes of the Storm players and breaking it down for noobs like me. and it was just a pleasure talking to him. He's incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, no, he does great work with Into Nexus and all of his stuff with Heroes of Storm. He's actually streaming right now. He usually has his Wednesday night stream, so he's working right now. So after this show, you can go check out the remainder of that stream. But I'm really glad that you were able to come on. I'm really glad we were able to talk about Battlegrounds, and you were at Nerdtacular as well not too long ago. We talked a bit about that on game night, where I, you know, said, hey, you were at Nerdtacular, did you say hi to Jocelyn? She's like, I remember, not really. She sees a lot of people.
No, it's completely understandable.
I put you guys in a weird place. I realize that. But that's what I do. That's my part of my charm.
That's a talent right there.
It is. It's a talent. Honed for years. all right. Well, I will let you go, and we'll wrap this show up. Thanks again, Mike, and we'll talk to you later.
All right.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for our call-in episode. I always have fun with these, and Discord just makes it super, super easy. But before we leave, we're going to talk about one final patron ad from Simon, who says, Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. And an update on the Kickstarter for Jocelyn's and Garrett's Embrace the Spoilers, as you all know, as how could you not know being on the internet and all, that Game of Thrones is back, and they're doing Embrace the Spoilers for Game of Thrones Season 7. They successfully funded at the, and they raised $1,521, which means that Jocelyn is finally going to watch Indiana Jones. And I'm not talking about the Crystal Skull that she says she's seen. We're talking about the good ones. So look forward to that, as well as spoilers for summer movies and, of course, Game of Thrones coming to a podcast near you. Thank you all for listening, watching, participating. It means the world to me and to Jocelyn to have you guys stop by and contribute to the show. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on amove.tv, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, the Star Wars Show. Star Wars? Let's talk about Star Wars. I knew the words. And many other fantastic podcast. You can support this show, patreon.com/thegamersin, and that goes right back into the show. We love all our patrons. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find Jocelyn at JossPlays, tweeting many great vacation pics. You can find me at RMurphy, and don't forget to follow the show at TheGamersIn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found at youtube.com/amovetv, and you can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com, and we'll read your thoughts on the show next week. Tell us what you think about Splatoon 2, Destiny 2 beta, stuff like that. Thanks again for watching, and we will talk to you all next week.